Here's what I am not buying this morning. I'm not buying the idea that Saturday night's Game 3 against Utah is the kind of big game that critics will latch onto with James Harden. And I will tell you why. Because if he scored 40 points and they won, nobody would be saying, oh my God, what a big game from James Harden to Game 3. It can't only be a big game when you struggle, right?
If they had lost that game, they would have latched onto it. It's too easy because we know, look, we know that in sports, people latch onto the easiest narrative. And the easiest narrative in that game would have been, obviously, and it would have been accurate. Like, okay, if James Harden is shooting that poorly, you're not going to win that game, or it's really hard to win the game. I think because they won it, and then if you go back and pay a little bit of attention to it, you see that he was still distributing the ball well, that he turned it on in the fourth quarter and things started to click, all those things. And they, because they won the game, I don't think it really registers. I'd be surprised if anybody's really talking about that. Especially when Steph Curry struggled yesterday. Steph Curry's had bad performances in the playoffs before. I think that that's just kind of, it goes with the territory. So I don't think, and in my mind personally, I was more encouraged by that James Harden performance than either game one or game two. Like that actually was real adversity versus a team that's got a very good defense, and he just stayed the course the entire time. I was very impressed.
The staying the course part, continuing to drive, even though Rudy Gobert was just swatting everything right back into Harden's face, I like that part of it. I'd rather Harden attack, draw fouls, get points from the free throw line, which he is so good at, than to continue to shoot from outside when he does not have his three-point shot on a given night. And, I mean, he did not have his three-point shot for the majority of Saturday night's game. I think, though, that people will look at this and latch onto it more than they will latch onto the performance that you mentioned. You know, Steph Curry, 3-for-14, Paul George, 3-for-16 over the weekend, because they've always done it with Harden. Harden always, because of the style of play that he has and because people just don't really appreciate it outside of this city, there's always going to be people looking for reasons to take him down a peg or two. A night like Saturday night is a reason. There will be some that say, hey, they won the game. That's good for the Rockets going forward. But there are others, myself, someone included, that'll say, when that happens against Golden State, Golden State is going to blow them out of the water.
Well, I don't disagree
blow
with
them out of the water?
Well, yes. Why? Here's my question, though. Why is it a big game? Why is Saturday a big game?
It was game three of the playoffs.
I know.
Versus the Utah Jazz, awful. Who are really good defense.
Awful shooting. Like, it was historically bad.
I know. I watched it, but I don't think that game was a big game. All playoff games are important, but that to me was not a big
game.
Right,
if he played poorly in that game and they lost, it's really still not a big deal.
Exactly.
It's the first game at home for a team that's got a really good defense in the Jazz. And that's where, again, Paul, the reason I asked, okay, do they get blown out versus the Warriors? That the offensive performance by your role players, Gerald Green, Daniel House, all those guys, like, that can be replicated versus the Warriors. The Jazz are a very, very good defense. So the fact that those guys scored and got involved, I think that you can replicate that. It's just a matter of, okay, but can you withhold the surge from the Warriors? And if the Warriors are on that night, then yeah, it'll be a bad game. But look, we've seen this with the Rockets and the Warriors. The Warriors are not the same offensive team versus the Rockets, either in the regular season or last year's postseason. The game will slow down. So I don't think any game, even if Harden is playing poorly, is necessarily a guaranteed loss or a blowout just because Harden's having a bad night. The Rockets have an ability to slow things down for the Warriors.
The other guys around him, okay, Gerald Green maybe has a good game, which is, you know, very, very hit or miss. Or Daniel House has a good one. But, okay, you're asking those two guys to play well in a series against Golden State. The pressure's up when it's the playoffs against Golden State. And how do those guys handle those situations? But the other thing is, like, do you trust Eric Gordon offensively? Do you trust Chris Paul offensively? Because those are the guys that are going to have to shoulder the load. And right now, I don't trust them enough to make up for a bad night from Harden. I think one of them is going to be coming against the Golden State Warriors. One. Possibly more. What's going to happen in that game? And then the rest of the series, are the Warriors going to defend the Rockets the way that the Jazz tried to, but per Ricky Rubio, weren't 100% buying into, or the way that the Bucks successfully did it towards the end of this regular season? Because the blueprint is there, and if the Warriors are engaged, then I feel like they're the team that's going to execute it in the West.
What I disagree with about Harden is I think it's an unfair standard to say when he plays well, okay, it's only the first round. and then he shoots poorly on Saturday, and it's why he can't play well in big games.
No, nobody's debating that, though. You know, Mike, I'm with you. It is unfair.
Okay.
It is unfair.
I just want to make that point. I just want to establish that point. Because I don't think it's, I just want to make the point clear that we can't hold a guy to a standard to where if he plays well, we're just kind of like moving on. But if he doesn't play well, we say, well, that was a big game. Well,
no, you're right.
If it's a big game, then he plays well, you should give him credit for playing well in the big game. That's my main thing. And I do agree with Seth on another part of this, which is I do feel good about Harden moving forward in that I had somebody text me during the game who felt like Harden was melting down. I did not feel
melting
that way.
Down.
Yeah, I don't know how.
How so? Like, because the ball wasn't going in?
I thought he was a little bit less aggressive than normal when his shot wasn't going down, but he kept playing and he kept passing off to Capella and Daniel House. He kept making nice plays. He had 6 steals on the night as well. I did not think that Harden in any way checked out of that game on Saturday, which was a major problem in game 6 2 years ago against San Antonio.
Last year, let's see, Steph Curry last year, game 3 versus the Cavs, went 3-for-16. Was that a sign that they weren't going to make it versus the Cavs, or that somehow Steph Curry didn't have the metal to perform in the finals or the playoffs? Like, that's just, these things happen. Steph Curry has had bad playoff series. He's had bad playoff performances. 3-for-16 wasn't quite as bad as what they, but you know what? Steph Curry's 3-for-16 was worse versus a much lesser defense than what James Harden was doing versus the Jazz. The Cavs defense was not as good as the Jazz defense.
Agreed. And the problem with the standards is that Golden State just has other guys who can, you know, basically,
Right. And that's the whole thing. Like, it's almost a matter of like, okay, can the Rockets do it if James Harden is as bad as he was? I'd say no, but that's not a slight against James Harden, because Steph Curry has been just as bad while even having arguably more opportunities because he's got better people around him.
Closeout possibility tonight, game 4. The Rockets are favored by 2.5 points. It's a 9:30 tip-off tonight in Salt Lake City. Peter King of the MMQB is writing this morning that he is hearing the Texans have Andre Dillard, left tackle, Washington State, as the top tackle on Houston's board. So Peter King has a whole mock draft, first round, 1-32, and he's got the Texans moving up from 23-17, selecting Andre Dillard. They'd give up their second round pick, number 55, to move up 6 slots for Andre Dillard. The way I'm thinking this morning, I'm not saying this will happen, but I am feeling it's a more likely possibility that the Texans will trade up in the draft for an offensive tackle if the right guy is there and he's close enough.
And I think it becomes a question of, okay, how far up? Because Brian Gain wants to retain as many of these picks as possible.
I think 5 or 6 spots.
Five or
about
six
the max.
Spots.
Yeah.
Do you have to trade that second rounder to get all the way up there?
I hope
to
not.
To get up 5 spots?
I'd give up the 3. I'd give up future picks. I'd move up and down the board if I needed to as well.
Yeah.
I would hope that it wouldn't definitely cost me one of the 2 second round picks.
If you really like the guy, do it. You just better make sure it works out. But I want them to trade whatever it takes to get the guy that they want, as opposed to maybe settling for somebody that they think is good but isn't the top guy on their board.
Let's see. The Browns, for the Trent Richardson trade, remember that one that worked out so awesomely? Oh, no, that was now the
old
one that worked out
bear.
when the Browns traded Trent Richardson to the Colts for the number 26 pick. That was the Browns traded number 26 and number 83 to the Eagles for number 22.
So they moved up one spot.
With a number 83 would have been a third round pick, right?
Yep.
So they traded a third round pick to the Eagles to move up. No, 4 spots.
4 spots. Sorry.
But that also included Trent Richardson, which I don't know. Does that even count as a player? Or is that like a salary dump at that point?
AAF all-time leading touchdown runner.
Good points.
That record will stand forever.
Yeah.
Won't it?
All right, I'm looking at this. That would be the big question. Would they be willing to move up and trade one of those valuable second-round picks that Gain was raving about 4 days ago to draft the tackle that they want?
I think they should be. I don't know that they will.
They will either.
I think Brian Gain, if I'm a general manager going into my first draft, I want to make as many picks as I possibly can.
Agreed.
Selfishly, probably. You know, I want to really have a chance to get as many guys that I like as I possibly can.
Remember when the Texans traded back to get, oh, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, they traded back to, the Ravens traded the Texans. The Texans moved back to number 26. When did they draft Joe Flacco?
08.
What pick did they take him with? How
late,
far up? Did
mid to late first round, I think.
Mid to late. So they traded their number 26 pick, number 89, and number 173. So a third and like a sixth or something for the Texans, number 18. So that's similar.
Okay.
They moved up.
Well, there
they
you
moved
go.
From 26 to 18 basically for a third rounder and a late round pick.
Well, listen.
I'll trade a third rounder in a heartbeat to get Andre Dillard.
That's the thing. That trade right there, the Joe Flacco trade, are you willing to trade a 3 and a 6 to move up to get the tackle that you want? Andre Dillard, Jonah Williams, Jawan Taylor, absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to do
that. Trade out for dinner and a coffee afterwards. Yeah,
ooh,
that's a good one.
Dinner and a coffee
I'm
afterwards.
Up to that trade.
But what's happening after the coffee?
I'm not trading a second rounder for hardly anything.
Second rounder is just, it feels like a lot for this football team with how many needs they have.
We need to, so at this point, we have to figure, maybe around pick 15 is when you start watching for a potential trade for the Texans.
I agree.
If they can move from 23 up to 14 or 15, and they could use a third rounder and a later round pick to do it, I'd be really antsy for that. That's when we'll officially go on trade up watches, like around pick 14.